This is a Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. My name is Patrick Hester, and I'm your host. I'm an author, a blogger, a podcast dude, and an all-around functional nerd. Someone recently sent me a text, and it said, "Are you alive?" I replied, "Brains." Today I have a special interview with J.A. Julie Casimir that was recorded at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference 2015. PPWC, as all the cool kids call it, takes place each year in April and plays home to a lot of authors of all levels of genres, from New York Times bestselling authors like R.L. Stine, all the way down to the newbie just starting out. If you're interested in learning more about PPWC, visit www.pikespeakswriters.com. A little bit about Julie. J.A. Julie Casimir is a writer living in Denver. Her novels include Curses, A Fucked Up Fairy Tale, Holly Socks and Dirtier Demons, Dope Sick, A Love Story, Froggy Style, The Assassin's Heart, and The Fairyland Murders. In a world where the fairyland is full of murders, Julie spent a few years spilling drinks on people as a bartender and then wasted another few years stalking people while working as a private investigator in the Denver area. You can find her, much too often, online at jacasimir.com. That's J-A-K-A-Z-I-M-E-R. I had a great conversation with Julie, and I recorded it for you. Because, you know what? That's just what I do. I record my conversations. Keep that in mind, people. It's not creepy. It's for podcasting. Not creepy at all. Without much further ado, let's go talk to Julie. I'm sitting here at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference 2015 in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And my guest today is J.A. Casimir. Did I pronounce it correctly?
You did. Please call me Julie.
Julie. And I didn't even ask you how to pronounce your name beforehand, which is a horrible rookie mistake, but one that I make every single time. And Julie, you are here at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference doing what?
I am teaching some workshops and meeting some writers and getting to hang out with really cool people.
And what is it that you do? I mean, are you a writer? Are you an editor? Are you a food truck aficionado? What do you do?
I write books.
Yeah?
I like a food truck, but yeah. I don't own one yet.
Food trucks are good. Yeah. I like food trucks. Yeah. What kind of books do you write?
I write urban fantasy, mysteries, anything really humor-related is my go-to. I write some romance.
I love humor in any kind of fiction. I do.
Me too.
And I'll read some stuff like science fiction, and when there's no, even just a little hint of humor, just a thread running through it, makes it feel more real to me, because we have that in our real lives. So I love that you have those in your books.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't have a thread of humor. I'm talking full on guys giggling in the bathroom kind of humor. It's bad.
Guys don't giggle in the bathroom.
I know. I heard from a writer yesterday that her husband had stole my first book, Curses, and she found him giggling in the bathroom.
So. Okay, well, by yourself, yes, but I mean, if you meant like guys together, see, the unwritten rule is that when there are one or more guys in a public restroom, there is no conversation. It's eyes forward, do your business, wash your hands, get out.
What happens if you do ask somebody a
question? It's horribly awkward. Yeah? It's horribly, horribly awkward. Because they know what you're doing. They do. If you really want to make guys uncomfortable, so if you walk in, normally a typical men's room, there might be three urinals and like a couple of stalls. I don't know about ladies' rooms, but there's usually the three urinals are stand-up. Sometimes there's a little wall between the urinals, just a little one. Sometimes there's not. So you're just standing there shoulder to shoulder with people. But if you really want to make guys uncomfortable, when you walk in and you see the three, use the one in the middle.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, when you walk in, can you use the one next to the person without it being creepy?
Well, it's like, have you ever gone to a movie with a guy?
Sure.
Right? And the guy doesn't want to sit next to the other guy. Mm-hmm. They want a seat between them, right? It's the same thing in the restroom. You walk in, and you'll see someone go to this one, and someone go to this one. The middle one's empty. And then another guy will walk in, and there's this moment of hesitation looking at that middle stall. And then sometimes they'll check out the middle urinal. They'll check out the stalls. Is it worth it to go to the stall versus the middle? It's this whole thing.
Men are so weird.
We are. We absolutely
are.
Some
weird creatures.
So what kinds of things have you been doing on panels here?
I did an excellent, well, I think it was excellent at least, one on guerrilla marketing today. I really am a firm believer in guerrilla marketing. And then yesterday I did one on what to do when it all goes wrong again, meaning when your career crashes and burns, and what to do and how to get out of that.
Andrew Gross had some good stuff today.
He did. He really did.
He was talking about that in the lunch. You know, what was some of your advice that you were given?
Some of the advice was to, it's okay to quit if you need to. It's okay to let go of a dream. Mm-hmm. You'll find another. But mostly you need to persevere. Really, you have to just roll with it.
And I don't know that necessarily all writers know that. We talk a little bit about you have to have a thick skin. You have to be used to rejection, you know, all this kind of stuff. But for some, it's very, very hard. It's a difficult, long road.
I mean, we constantly get kicked in the teeth, no matter if it's from, you know, your first query letter to your big-time publisher. Mm-hmm. I mean, or, you know, big-time published author. It's amazing how bad it can really be. And then the joy is that you actually publish a book. I mean, that's fantastic, too.
Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many overnight successes have a 10-year, you know, stretch in front of them.
That was right? Actually my biggest point in yesterday's session, so nice.
Yeah, yeah. When did you start writing that? Well, I wrote the first draft in 2001, you know, and then I took it out in 2005. And then I wrote 12 more drafts before it finally got a published. So, yeah, it happens all the time.
Absolutely.
I've noticed that Denver... You live in Denver. I live in Aurora. Denver has a lot of writers. A lot of them. I don't know. Is Denver like the mecca for writers on the West Coast, or what's going on?
Maybe it's our coffee shops. We have some really good ones.
You don't think it's Santiago's breakfast burritos?
Definitely the breakfast burritos, extra hot green chilies.
I'm glad you got the reference.
Yeah.
I haven't had one in a long time because now I'm working in Centennial.
Oh.
I used to work at, and this is totally meta, and no one else on the podcast is going to give a shit, but I used to work at I-25 and 8th Avenue. And if you know downtown Denver, there's a Santiago's two blocks away on 6th Avenue. And so I used to get off at 6th Avenue and hit Santiago's and make that little loop around back to 8th Avenue and go to work, and I had my breakfast burritos.
Those are worth every detour you must have faced.
Aren't they?
Every.
They are. Yes. They are the best. And I can't... Twitter and photos just don't... No. Don't get that message across to people.
And they're just wrapped in plain foil and they have look you
seen,
like nothing.
Have you seen them like bring in the buckets of them?
I haven't.
So the one on Leedsdale, and I know I'm going way off on a tangent, but the one on Leedsdale is the other one that I used to go to because I worked right over there at Evans and Monaco. So it wasn't too far to jump over to Leedsdale and get them. And that one, and the other thing is all the Santiagos have no parking. And huge traffic jams, no way to turn left out of them usually. You have to turn right and go the way you don't want to go. But anyway, the one on Leedsdale, they have bins in the front that are all covered in aluminum foil. And they put the mild, hot, super hot, half and halves in different bins. And you'll see them walk up with these just giant things all wrapped and ready to go, and they're so wrapped so tight that it's just a trip. And then they load them up, and then they say, how many do you? And it's almost like soup Nazi, right? You walk in and you go, 5 mild. Okay, it's going to be this one. Okay, step aside. Next one comes up. 3 half and half. 2 mild. 1 extra hot. I want cheese, you know. And as soon as you say something off of the menu,
like,
you're waiting.
Do you have chicken?
You're waiting so far. We used to have one gal who always wanted... no green chili.
What's wrong with her?
Right? And then that also means now you're going to stand there and wait 20 minutes. Because they don't have one with no green
right.
chili. They got to make them. Anyway. So, love Santiago's.
Fantastic.
Always have. Always have. So, tell me a little bit about your books. I mean, you said you have an urban fantasy series.
I do. I started off as an urban fantasy writer. I wrote The Body Dwellers, which is my only... book that has any deeper meaning. The rest of them are really, I hate to dare say, shallow. but yeah, shallow and humor. And so that was the first urban fantasy I wrote. And then I wrote a next one that was Holy Socks and Dirtier Demons,
mm-hmm.
Which is about all sorts of different religions and how they would react to Christ being born. And then I stopped writing urban fantasy and moved to fairy tales. It's a series called Fucked Up Fairy Tales.
Okay.
And so that's kind of where I've been at recently. And my last book was The Fairyland Murders, which is kind of a more dark noir fairy tale series.
So what is the premise of Fucked Up Fairy Tales?
So the first book is RJ, who's a villain. He gets hired accidentally to solve Cinderella's murder.
Hmm.
She gets run over by a bus the first page.
A bus.
I loved it.
So they're set in modern times.
Modern times. Okay. Everything's contemporary, but just really twisted characters, really twisted versions of fairy tale characters that we've grown up with.
Okay. And what was the genesis or the idea behind having them set in like our contemporary times? Were you influenced by fables or Once Upon a Time, or was it before all those came out? Or
I had the idea first.
Okay.
They stole my idea. Actually, what's funny is that as the book was being released, all these things became really popular.
Right, yeah.
Which was great for me. But the kind of the thought process behind that is I like writing contemporary, in a contemporary setting. It was no more thought than that.
Mm. Okay. Any particular cities that you're targeting, that you're putting these characters in?
The first book is New Never City, which is New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And the second book is Sin City, which is Las Vegas.
Okay. That's interesting. And what about the Fairyland Murders?
It is set in New Never City, so back to New York.
Okay. So these are sharing the same world is basically what you're saying.
Yes, I share the same world, different characters, except for the Fairyland Murders. The next book follows the same main character.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the Tooth Fairy.
And the Tooth Fairy.
Okay, and the Tooth Fairy.
You know what? Actually, the Pratchett book with the Tooth Fairy kind of ruined the Tooth Fairy for me.
Yeah.
Where the guys break into the Tooth Fairy's lair to take all the children's teeth so they can make them not believe in the Hogfather anymore. I don't know if you ever, have you read The Hogfather or seen The Hogfather?
I don't remember it. I probably have at some point. I have a horrible memory.
It's a great holiday movie to watch. The BBC did a little adaptation of it a few years ago, multi-part, and it's about how Death's daughter or granddaughter has to, and Death have to save the Hogfather, who is the Discworld's version of Santa Claus, because someone has put a hit out on him, and they figure the only way to kill something that is believed in by so many children is to get the children to no longer believe. And so they're going to steal all the teeth from the Tooth Fairy in order to influence all the children to keep them from believing in the Hogfather.
Yeah, I remember a movie with that same premise that just came out a few years ago with Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny, but the premise was stealing the teeth.
Was that the animated one?
Yeah, it was the animated
one. With Jack Frost?
Yeah.
Wasn't it called Jack Frost? Or something?
I don't think so. Guardians keeps coming to mind, but I cannot think of what the
Eternal Guardians or... Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And like, Santa Claus was, like, this big Russian dude or something with the big bushy... Yeah, I remember that. That was a great one. So, who's publishing your books? Who's your publisher?
For the Curses and Froggy Style, which is the F'd Up Fairy Tale series, it's Kensington. For The Fairyland Murders and The Lady in Pink, which is the next book, it's Kensington and Lyrical Press. And then I have a couple other publishers for romance novels and champagne books. And
so you're kind of all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
You do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
How many books do you normally put out in a year?
I had a whole stack before I got my first book deal.
Oh, okay.
I've gotten a few of those out. So I've been published for 3 years, and in August I'll have my 10th book out.
Wow, that's awesome. So someone yesterday was saying to me, pipeline. So you had your pipeline kind of already built up, and you had lots of things that you wanted to push out.
Yeah, I suggest that for any writer. Keep what you write.
Well, yeah, I just had, again, the conversation here where someone was saying, you know, oh, I've got this book, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, well, what happens when you pitch that to an editor or to an agent or somebody, and they're like, you know, it's kind of good, but it's not really what I'm looking for right now, but I like you, and you're very personable, and I think that we could work together, and I like what I'm seeing here, but what else do you have? And you don't want the answer to that to be, I even had it happen to me because an editor or an agent said, yeah, I like this. Are you working on anything else? And I said, yeah, I'm working on a space opera. Oh, I love space opera. I said, good. Is it done? No. Okay, well, you know, let me see the other thing first, and then we'll talk about the space opera. It's like, okay.
Who doesn't love space opera?
David Lynch.
All
right. No, I'm teasing. Didn't he do the Dune movie with Kyle MacLachlan? Who did that one? I thought it was David Lynch.
I'm so bad at this. I apologize.
So I'm taking it that there's no pop culture references in your book.
There are tons of pop culture references.
You just don't remember what
book.
Any of them
yeah,
are.
Yeah, I just don't have a memory. I don't even remember what my books are about. So, yeah.
So are you a Denver native?
I am not. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and I moved here when I was in my teens.
So if you're born in Cleveland, Ohio, are you genetically required to be a Chrissy Hynde fan?
No, but definitely a poor, sad Browns fan.
Do you have Eternal season tickets? I hear they're cheap.
Really, really cheap.
The Browns. Poor Browns.
Poor Browns.
They get beat on a lot.
Every year.
Well, you know what? I was born in Chicago, so I'm genetically required to root for the Bears.
Even with Jay
Cutler. So that's the story. That's the one I love. So I'm living in Denver. I do become a Broncos fan. The Broncos are cool. I like them. I'm watching them. And then they get Jay Cutler. And I'm like, oh, and I don't like him as a quarterback, and I don't like him. And then I get to work one day, and I see Broncos get rid of Cutler. And I'm like, yes, I never have to root for any team with him on it again. I never have to care. I'm never going to see Jay Cutler again. And I click the link and I start reading it, and they traded him to the Bears. And I'm like, no! And we've been stuck with him ever since.
Yeah, but he's not doing too bad for
you. Oh, he's doing terrible.
Well, I mean, considering the Browns have no quarterbacks ever, he's not doing too bad.
You have Johnny Football.
Right. We have Johnny Football. Are we lucky?
See, so you know, you're remembering the NFL stuff, yeah, so. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Cutler, he's not good. So what has influenced you? I mean, what do you read? What do you enjoy?
I love Christopher Moore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if I could be Christopher Moore, that would make me so happy the rest of my life.
Why?
For me, he writes the perfect books.
Mm-hmm.
They're funny. They're full of just... They're entertainment at its best. Sometimes they have deeper meanings, but most times they don't. They're just something that it's really an honor and a pleasure to read. Plus, he's just a great guy. You know, he'll answer you on Twitter, or he'll, you know, talk to you on Facebook. If you email him, he will email you back. I love that about him.
Very cool. What'd you do before you were writing?
So I've had lots of careers. I started off as a bartender.
Okay.
And then I went to become a private investigator. And then after that, I decided I would get my degree in forensic psychology, my master's degree, which I did. And then I abruptly decided, oh, I'm going to write for a living, which was the stupidest thing I've ever decided. And so now I work for a nonprofit in Denver. So I've done a lot of stuff.
Wow. When you said guerrilla marketing, I thought you were going to put marketing in there somewhere.
I've never been a marketer.
Really?
I learned everything in that class that I've taught in the last 3 years of marketing.
So another conversation that keeps coming up here is the whole self-promotion thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's at least expected of science fiction and fantasy authors. At worst, it's required.
Right.
And not everybody wants to do it. What kind of advice are you giving people?
In anything you do, be genuine. So even if you hate self-promotion, if you're genuine in it, it's not a chore.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I've always talked about, if you're just sitting there going, and you open up a Twitter account and your entire Twitter feed is buy my book, link, buy my book,
yep,
link, buy my book, link. You're going to get some, but it's not the same as, my cat puked on my bed today. My kids pooped for the first time. Of course, they did it on the floor. You know,
you forgot your underwear at a conference.
Yes.
You know, stuff like
that. These are the things that make you real. And then when you tweet out, hey, I've got my new book out, here's a link where you can buy it, it's more genuine.
Absolutely.
And not everybody gets that. And some people are like, well, I don't have the time to spend on Twitter. Or I don't have the time to spend on Facebook.
Well, then I don't have the time to read their book.
And what I would love is to have some sort of quantifiable number that, you know, shows that people who use social media are more successful because they're self-promoting. But I don't have those numbers. You know, I don't know. And I always think that in science fiction and fantasy, we kind of live in a bubble.
Right.
Because there's so many people in SF&F that are out there on social media and they're talking and they're feeding back and forth and this and that. But outside the bubble, I don't know. Do right. you?
I don't. I feel very much like I live in a bubble of, you know, and the people that I promote to are people that have promoted to me. It's an endless circle, and I would love to find a place where you find readers. You know, I'd love to have readers friend me on Facebook. That would be awesome. I'd love to know more about their lives and what their entertains them. But at this point, I just don't know that that's the case. I'm always marketing to other writers, which is great, but it's not really helpful.
So when you say guerrilla marketing, are you talking about the actual, there's a book, guerrilla marketing, and there's like tons of books about it?
Kind of the ideals of it, but for me, the one thing that rings true is to do 5 things a day to promote yourself, whether that be emailing another author, whether that be telling somebody at a conference, hi, my name's Julie, or that being going to dinner and putting your card when they put the card, you know, the tray down to take your money, to put a promotional item on it and let them take it away with your credit card.
What do you think about, there's been some high profile SF&F authors who've gotten backlash for self-promoting lately?
There are so many interesting things going on in this community right now.
I'm not going down that road. I'm not talking about... I know exactly what you're talking about, and I'm not going there.
I mean, there's always backlash for people that become big time. And I don't think there's anything wrong with self-promotion. I do think there's something wrong with people that are not genuine in their promotion.
So... I think we're on the same page. It's about being human.
Absolutely.
It's about actually putting yourself out there, talking about your life. But now, I have yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I know I keep saying yesterday, but that's just because yesterday was the first day of this conference. But yesterday I was talking to an author and someone just starting out who basically said, I can't do any of that. I don't want to do any of that. I want to be the kind of author that my dad grew up reading or my mom grew up reading, that, you know, kind of I picked up their favorite books and read them. And these were people that you didn't really know them. There was no connection between you and them other than the book in their hand. And if you wanted to connect to them, you wrote a letter and you mailed it to the address on the back of the book, and somehow, some way, magically, it might make it to the author themselves, who then had a fan letter from you. That's the kind of author they want to be. I don't know if that's possible anymore.
I don't think it's possible at all. And even back then, I cannot even imagine how many authors didn't sell books because they didn't have the chance to tell people who they were. I mean, publishers 30 years ago told people what to read. Now we have an open field where we can tell other people what we enjoy. So I think it's a useful tool.
Yeah, I agree. Do you have a, do you do blogging at all?
I had a blog, and I had a really fun blog, but then I realized that I was only bitching on my blog, and it was, you know, complaining about stuff that in publishing, and it, there's a lot of stuff to complain about in a very kind of humorous and snarky way, and I recently killed that blog just because there was stuff on there that shouldn't have been on there. I shouldn't have said, and I do that a lot. So.
But you still have a website.
I do have a website. It's jacasmer.com, and I'm constantly on Facebook. I'm not so much on Twitter. I just find it harder to understand. I'm old, you know.
Twitter, this is the way I've always explained it from a marketing standpoint, because I'm a marketer. That's what I do. I'm a digital marketer. Twitter is a cocktail party. You ever walked into a cocktail party? You have little clusters of people all around the room talking, and you can move through the entire room. and you can pass conversations, and you can decide to step in and chat with them or step out. And as soon as you're gone, the conversation's over and you've moved on to something else. It's very fluid, very flowing. Facebook is your rec center, right? There's a big cork wall, and everybody walks in and puts their little flyer up on the cork wall and walks away. Then they come back a little while later, and they check out what everybody else has put up there. Has anybody taken the little numbers off of their flyer that they're trying to sell their bike? You know, and that's kind of Facebook. It's there. It lingers. So you can post something on Facebook, come back 8 hours later, and people have found it and started posting on it. You post something on Twitter and come back 8 hours later, you're pretty much, people have moved on.
Right.
They're no longer where you are anymore.
That's a brilliant way to put it. And I know that at cocktail parties, I'm the awkward person that says something horrible and spills stuff on myself, which probably explains why I like Facebook more.
Gotcha.
But that's a brilliant way to put it.
Thank you. Yeah, I should trademark that.
You should. Encourage
people. Absolutely. So you're here at Pikes Peak Writers. Have you had any newbie little baby authors come up to you and tell you horror stories or beg you for advice? Is there anything that's kind of come up that you think our listeners would find interesting?
I find those newbie writers so entertaining. I remember my first conference, and I went to the Friday sessions and then went to my hotel room and I cried for an hour. So I completely understand newbies, and I would love people to come up and say, hi, please help me. I'm all about helping each other. I mean, again, the human thing.
And one thing that I've noticed is within science fiction and fantasy, that is a very prevalent feeling among authors.
Mm-hmm.
They want to help. They want to help the next ones. They don't see people as competition, really. You know, it's like, yes, I have the knowledge. I will pass it on. I will help. I will do this. I will come to these conferences. And I think that's a great thing. It really is.
I really don't see us as writers as competing against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because one reader that likes my stuff won't necessarily like your stuff. And that's great. There's a lot of people out there in the world. There's a lot of potential readers.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you planning on any other conventions this year? Are you going to go to WorldCon, World Fantasy, anything like that, Romantic Times?
I don't have any plans.
Okay.
I usually don't have any plans, so we'll see what happens.
Okay, how about Mile High Con?
I love Mile High Con. Every time I go, I'm just amazed by how well it's put together and how fun it is.
Rose is amazing.
Right, Rose is amazing. And it makes me so incredibly nervous to be there. Just because I feel so, like, I'm so lame. I'm not a real science fiction writer. I suck. And, yes, but I would love to go to Mile High Con. I just haven't decided to yet.
Okay. Yeah, I worry about Rose. What happens when Rose decides she can't do it anymore?
Right. Hopefully she'll train somebody really, really well.
Come on, please. So, well, believe it or not, we're running up on our time that we agreed to. So, what is your... Do you have a current book out? Do you have something coming out soon?
I do. The Lady in Pink, which is the second book in the Fairyland Murders or the Deadly After Ever series, is coming out in August.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And do you know, can they pre-order that right now?
They can. Please pre-order.
Very
please,
cool.
Please, please pre-order.
And pre-orders are important. You know, it can boost how many books a bookseller buys from you. So, yeah, that's awesome.
And it makes my publisher really, really happy so he doesn't yell at me.
And then anything else coming up after that?
I have the second book in my romantic suspense series called The Assassin's Kiss coming out. I don't have a date yet. And then after that, I think I'm going to work on the third book in the Fucked Up Fairy Tale series.
Okay. And how can people find you on Facebook?
Please look for Julie Kazmer. Mm-hmm. It's K-A-Z-I-M-E-R. It's on my website. Please friend me on Facebook. I like to hang out with people and talk and corkboard, I guess, at a rec center with sweaty gym socks.
Do you ever do signings or anything anywhere?
I do. I do occasionally do ones at, like, Barnes & Noble or... but I'm pretty burned out right at this point.
Okay.
It's been a lot of books, so maybe in August I'll do some more stuff.
Do you have any opportunities for people to, like, reach out to you on your website to get signed copies, or...?
I don't. Huh? I should.
There you go. Thanks. Guerrilla marketing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Trademark that, too.
All right. Well, is there anything you'd like to tell our listeners before I let you go?
Thanks for hanging out. That's about
it. No problem. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it.
Thanks to all the folks who make the Pikes Peak Writers Conference such a great event. That includes MB, Shannon, Jen, Jason, Stacy, the two Lauras, Robert, Becky, Jared, Susan, Karen, Michelle, Ashley, and so, so many more. I've got a couple more surprises from PPWC 2015 that I'll be pushing out here on SF Signal, so stay tuned. I've also got some that I'm going to be pushing out over on Functional Nerds, so you need to go check that out too. Until next time, I want you to remember this. In a fight between bear claws and bagels, who is going to win? The pastry that actually has claws? Or the other thing? Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends. And have them tell their friends, and so on, and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF and F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.